Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a split show. The first one is going to be with Strategic HR. Heather Bassett and James Brissenden are going to be talking about strategic HR conferences that are coming up, Main HR Convention, Strategic HR, and Workers' Comp. We're going to learn about them. The second show today is going to be Chris Sincar from FranChoice, and he's going to be talking about how you can use franchising as a transition from employment into business ownership over time. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with the one and only Heather Bassett and her partner, James Brissenden, about the 2017 HR lineup for the Main HR or Strategic HR lineup for 2017. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, David.
So you guys have a great lineup coming up. And first of all, I want to thank you for being a sponsor of the HR Power Hour. You guys were one of the first way back when. Doesn't seem possible. We're heading into our fifth year. And it just doesn't seem possible. It's amazing sometimes. Craziness. But let's start with a lineup in 2017. The first one is the Main HR Convention, May 9th through 12th. Tell me a little bit about, you know, why should somebody go this year? What's the big things that are happening? Take it away.
So we are kicking off the program on Tuesday. And one of the program key lineups that I'm most excited about is a return of Aaron Christopher, and I don't know if you remember, David, but about 4 years ago, he was kicking off with Teen Truth on a Tuesday, and there was not a dry eye in that room. If you can remember, they were there to talk about bullying, and really it was a story about Teen Truth, stemmed from Columbine, and the message was that even employers were seeing some bullying in the workplace and how that can stem from actions in the high school. And it was a dynamic program, a lot of visuals. Aaron Christopher is a director, so he has a newer film called Listen, and he will be exploring what it means to be an active listener. And I think it's quite relevant for our time right now, these lessons in listening. So I'm most excited about his kickoff on Tuesday. And, of course, we'll have plenty to talk about when it comes to employment law. Those are some of the popular topics and for people to stay up to date on what you need for things like the value of accommodation for the ADA. When I travel the state to the HR chapters, I think there are a lot of hands that are raised when there's topics about the ADA. One of your speakers that you have on your show, we're excited to have this year, is Deborah Wise Ford, and she's going to have a discussion on the recent trends of workplace gamification to boost engagement and retention, and that seems to be a popular topic when I'm reading about national HR matters. So that will be an interesting program. And then, of course, we love to highlight Maine great leaders, and we're looking forward to having Bob Montgomery Rice, from the CEO from Bangor Savings Bank, on the stage. And he brings some stories from his background and how his HR roots have enhanced his work as a CEO. So I think our audience will be very excited to hear from him, to have a personal touch when it comes to HR in his CEO process.
I think, you know, one of the things that I really like about this year's convention is you have a focus on some CEOs. And I think a lot of HR professionals really are looking forward to hearing, you know, directly from these CEOs. I know you have, you know, obviously Bob, you have from...
Joshua Broder, yes, the CEO from Tilson. I think one of the big topics for this year is retention and also growth. And so he'll be sharing his very successful story of how his company has grown from 10 to over 200 employees in 6 years and how he has basically kept his culture happy. So I think that's going to be a very popular discussion.
No, there's no question. And, you know, one of the things that Josh talks a lot about is the fact that he's been able to do it and double their sales in 6 years in a row while continuing to maintain the culture. That alone is an astounding feat. When you think about the complexities that are involved in doing that. So I know he's going to be certainly a great speaker in terms of being able to provide that information. What are some of the other highlights that are coming up from the main HR convention? And you can mention about the fact that people don't necessarily have to go for the full 4 days. They can go for two or three or 1 day. Talk a little bit about, you know, the way it's structured, the way that, you know, you guys are putting this together.
Sure, yes. I think there's sometimes confusion from newer folks about the time period, May 9th to the 12th, and people don't have to come the entire time. You can buy a 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 4 day pass. A lot of organizations split their time within their departments, so you'll see entire departments coming, but they're splitting up their days. So that works well for a very busy HR department where there are several segments of that department that can benefit from the employment law, but also some of the information that we're giving people based on payroll or benefits, that you can split up those days. And we try to make the schedule accommodating to that, so we spread out different segments of what HR needs throughout each of the days. And we found that to be very successful for larger companies that need to send their entire departments.
One of the things I noticed is you have 6 learning tracks this year: Strategic, Talent Quest, Legal Eagles, Building a Great Workplace, Wellness, and HR Skill Building. If somebody's, you know, coming to your website or somebody's thinking about going, how does somebody select or think about the different angle in terms of what they're looking to get out of the conference?
I think I'll take this one on. We spend a lot of time structuring the sessions and the tracks so that people can piece together a pretty individualized and cohesive kind of education for themselves. So I personally am available for anyone to contact me and just kind of talk about what they're looking to get out of the week, how many days they're going, maybe there's a specific focus their office has at the time, and we can work together to kind of construct the best education for them. That's kind of one of the best parts about, I think, the education is how consciously we craft the week so that people can get that individualized takeaway.
We're talking with Heather Bassett and James Brissenden from MaineHR.com. That's MaineHR.com, talking about their great program coming up, first being the Maine HR Convention. One of the other things that I know HR professionals really think about when they're looking to come to convention is continuing credits and education credits, whether it be for the SHRM, S-H-R-M. You guys are a SHRM preferred provider, and you'll have up to 23 credits, I believe, for recertification. Is that correct?
That's correct. We just heard news from SHRM and also HRCI. Well, I think we're just making an announcement soon about the credit hours. Yeah, we're preferred providers, so we counted out how many somebody can individually earn up to, and yeah, that is the number.
That's great. And both credits for Sherman, HRCI, that's fantastic. You know, one of the other things that people come to is the camaraderie, right? The networking, the excitement of being there. You have events that are scheduled typically each evening, especially in terms of people being able to get together. There's a welcome gala dinner on Tuesday night. There's, you know, cocktail hours that are on Wednesday and Thursday. Talk to a little bit about some of the, maybe the people that come and say, hey, it's not just about the learning, but it's also about, you know, networking and learning from others.
Yeah, so when we survey our audience, we do get a lot of response about the time that people get to have with their colleagues, with their peers, and also our wonderful business partners who help in so many ways on the resource end. And that's because we do have plenty of moments throughout the event for people to just come together and engage. So one of the popular events that had started last year is the Tuesday Welcome Gala Dinner. And this is a time for people that just need a time to have dinner with some other people and not have to try to find a dinner date. So we bring an on-site dinner opportunity, and this is hosted by Maine Sherm and also the National Sherm Group, and they have a lot of their members involved at this dinner, too. So you get to meet, if you're not already associated with a local chapter, you get to meet with a lot of chapter leaders from all 8 Sherm State chapters and get to get connected to these wonderful leaders, but also the members. And back by popular demand, we're also offering gelato for 2 days, thanks to gorgeous gelato.
Well, you know, I knew there was a reason for going, and that should seal the deal. It certainly does with
yes.
me, with no
and
question
of course,
about
the
that.
The baristas from Bard Coffee will be back, and they're actually going to be in their own room, so we'll have more of a cafe-style section of the lobby where people can have those kind of coffee house chats that we often have at Bard Coffee right downtown Portland, even with you, David.
Absolutely. That's what we do. Hey, you know, this is on May 9th through 12th at the Samerset Resort in Rockport, Maine. I want to make sure people know exactly where this is going to be happening again. May 9th through 12th, 2017, at the Samerset Resort in Rockport, Maine. You know, when you really think about this, James, you've been doing this for a couple of years now. What is the big thing that you see that people talk about when they go to the HR convention? You know, I know certainly Heather and Bud have been doing it for years, but what do you see as the big takeaway that people get from going to the Maine HR convention?
That's a fun one. I really focus on the attendees. That's my job. So I try to be as attuned as possible to the feedback, word of mouth, and in our surveys. And a really interesting kind of theme that I've noticed in working for the company in the past year is how important it is to give the employees and Maine HR professionals a true retreat, not just a business event, but somewhere where they can actually recharge and kind of rejuvenate. And it is really important for people. We find that if somebody is walking around with their Bard Coffee at the Samerset, 5 cups of gelato in their back pocket, they're happy and they're networking and they're enjoying their time. They can actually get more out of the sessions too. So there's kind of a cool link there. And so that the focus on providing an atmosphere in which an attendee can kind of recharge is one thing that's very exciting for me to look at and to help provide to the attendees.
I think that goes to your theme of everyone thrives when HR is on top of its game, doesn't it? I mean, really, it's about making sure that, you know, the key link to success is that, hey, you relax a little, you learn, you're in an environment where you learn, and that's how you win. So again, it's May 9th through 12th, 2017 at the Samerset Resort, Rockport, Maine. This is MaineHR.com is where you go. Click on the Maine HR Convention for 2017 link. We're going to be talking about the other 2 events that are happening here through MaineHR.com when we come back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOP 100.5 FM. We will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're talking with Heather Bassett and James Brissenden from MaineHR.com. MaineHR.com, where you can look up three of the amazing programs that are happening for 2017. In the first segment, we talked about the Maine HR Convention. The one, the only for 2017. It's a great place where everybody can go and really learn. But then there is the second program that comes up, and it's called the Workers' Comp Summit, the oldest running program that they do. I know you guys have been doing this for I don't know how many years. Maybe you can tell me how many years. But this program is so specific, so targeted, and so fantastic. Talk to us a little bit about, Heather, where the Comp Summit came from, how you guys got kicked off with it, and what we can look forward to in 2017.
This is our longest-running conference. It began more of a collaboration with the State Chamber and also the Workers' Comp Board. And we continue our relationship with the Workers' Comp Board and Paul Signolfi, who is our commissioner. And he is very integral in creating this type of opportunity for the entire workers' comp community to come together. So a huge shout out to Paul for all of his efforts with us. And it's very unique. There really isn't anything like this across the country where we actually bring in the entire community to come together and talk about workers' comp. So we're heading back up to the Samoset in August for August 27th to the 29th for this year. And we are currently planning that program. And we've actually sent out a request for proposals. So if anybody's listening and you are involved in workers' comp, we'd love RFP from you. And we plan another time to talk about anything related to comp adjusters, workers' comp attorneys, also the employment community. So we do have HR professionals coming to this as well. A lot of safety and prevention people. Also, occupational medical has really gained traction at this program.
So this program, as you said, is one of your oldest programs, and it really focuses on the statewide workers' compensation community. You know, what are some of the key things as you're looking at this program coming up? And I recognize you're still working on the program itself, but what are some of the key things that people could be thinking about as they plan to budget for 2017? They say, hey, you know, why should I again come back to this program? What's going to be there? You may not have full programming, but what is the big theme behind what you're looking for to do again for 2017?
Well, at this particular program, there is quite a bit of legal year in review, and we also involve the appellate division. So that is probably one of the most popular topics of discussion are the legal trends happening, but also when it comes to wellness. So with the occupational medical community, how to keep your employees well and away from any kind of safety dangers. So that has been a success story in the state of Maine, and MEMIC has worked hard on that, too, over the years. And they often have quite involvement at this program, both speaking but also participating. So a lot of the time, just like at the Maine HR convention, the engagement that happens outside of class is often reported back as one of the biggest takeaways, is to be able to come together as a community and talk with each other, both in class and outside of class.
So as people are thinking for the 2017 Workers' Comp Summit, they should go to mainhr.com, click on the Workers' Comp Summit button right at the top, third one in, August 27th through 29th, 2017, at the Samerset Resort. You do like the Samerset, Heather. Samerset Resort in Rockport, Maine, and this is the Comp Summit. All right, so there is a third and final event in 2017. It happens to be my personal favorite, which is the Strategic HR at Mount Washington event. It really is about the theme, we create the experience so that you can make a difference. It really is such a great, fantastic event. I see that it's going to be held on October 29th through 31st, 2017. You should be budgeting now. Of all the events, I got to tell you, this is absolutely one of the favorites. Heather or James, whoever wants to speak first, talk to me a little bit about, where this event came from, how it's evolved over the years, and really why it's been so successful.
It's an interesting story. It was kind of an aha moment. Back in, I want to say now 7 years ago, because we're going into our sixth year at the Mount Washington, we began getting attendees to our main HR convention from out of state. And although we're really targeting Maine-specific programming, we do touch on national and global information, but it's quite a bit of Maine-specific type of law. When we started getting people from out of state, we began asking, well, why are you coming to our state conference? Don't you have a state conference? And what was lacking in some of the other states was the amount of senior-level programming. And we really strive to give our attendees at the main HR convention senior level programming, but also programming across the board. And when we looked in our regional area in the Northeast, we did see that we were outperforming senior level delivery of credits and also programming. So we reached out to our sister New England states. They are SHRM state councils, and said, if we can produce a senior-level program, would you come on board and endorse it? And they were all very excited to have this opportunity, because most of the other states, their state conference is run on a volunteer basis. So we get to do this for a living, and we get to target senior-level programming at our state conference as a living instead of as a volunteer. So the strategic program came into place with the endorsement of SHRM and also the six New England SHRM state councils, and it's been thriving ever since. So in 2016, we had representation from all over New England, but also we had a contingent come out of Botswana, which was very interesting. They got to see snow for the first time. It snowed a little bit last October at the Mount Washington. But we also had representation from other states, including California, New Jersey, also Florida. So we are gaining attention throughout the country, really. And the Mount Washington is such a lovely location to have it, so it allows for people to come to a destination as well.
We're talking with Heather Bassett and James Brissenden from MaineHR.com. James, once again, I'm going to ask this question because I think you're in a unique perspective, having been with the organization for a little over a year. What do you see as the big takeaway about what people look at Strategic HR at Mount Washington? What is it that you see the audience, the participants, really wanting to go for?
Okay, this one is a very special event because it does attract, and it is built for, very experienced HR professionals. And we very consciously conduct the sessions and let the speakers know and let the attendees know that there's going to be a speaker and they're going to be giving fantastic takeaways, but we're also going to leverage the knowledge that's in the room, in the seats, from the attendees. And to have the balance between the immense collective experience of the attendees with amazingly interesting and knowledgeable speakers, and kind of have this very natural exchange of ideas. It's not just kind of a one-way teaching. It's really collaborative. And that is, it sparks some incredibly interesting conversation that you probably wouldn't see if it was just a speaker or a keynote talking at the attendees.
No, there is no question it has a unique perspective going to this event. Again, it's October 29th through 31st, 2017, at the Omni Mount Washington Hotel in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. So let's recap, shall we? We have three events happening in 2017. The main HR convention. Heather, when does that happen again?
May 9th to the 12th, when winter ends in Maine.
We like that. That's my favorite time of year. James, how about the middle conference, the Workers' Comp Summit? When is that happening?
Workers' Comp coming at you August 27th to 29th, also at the beloved Samoset Resort.
Perfect. And finally, my favorite, the Strategic HR at Mount Washington, October 29th through 31st, 2017, Omni Mount Washington Hotel, Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. I want to thank you guys so much for being on the show today to talk about these three great programs that are coming up. We know they're going to be awesome. We need everybody to budget for it and make that happen. And thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. The second show today is Chris Sincar from Franchoice, and he's going to be talking about how you can use franchising as a transition from employment into business ownership over time. And Chris, welcome to the show.
David, it's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you know, welcome back. We love having you on. And this is the time of year, right? Right here in March, when people are starting to think about their careers, what they're doing, you know, starting to think about spring, and we're thinking of new opportunities. And so we thought of who best to bring on to talk about a potential change in their career, potential change in getting into business, but you, Chris, and to talk a little bit about franchising.
Thanks, David. It's good to be back. And springtime does always bring all sorts of changes. And I think one of those things that crop up in the spring is that as people start to reevaluate their career path, they get that itch that maybe they want to do something on their own. And you know what I think we've both found, David, is that as we've explored franchising together in the past and talked about it with your guests, it gives people a nice, smooth transition point to move into business ownership for the first time. So I think as people start thinking about whether they want to be business owners, franchising should absolutely be part of that discussion for them.
I 100% agree, and I've said this, you know, as you know, I own a franchise here in Maine, the Dale Carnegie Maine franchise, and obviously have my other business, Career Management, and there is such a difference between a franchise and having a business without all the processes in place, right? I likened what I've said before is the fact that I wish I had a franchise to start with, because it really gives you some of the basic tools, the methodologies, the processes that already work, and it's just a matter of putting them into place.
So I think one of the interesting parts, David, is that I have found there's a couple of major advantages to franchising over independent business ownership. And just as you have in your career done both, I've done both as well. I think one of the biggest points on the startup cycle is that owning a franchise really tends to put you on the fast track. Because, as you said, all of those processes and procedures are already in place, it allows you to fast-track your marketing. It allows you to pick up customers faster. It allows you to build your business to a profitable point in a matter of months instead of years. And it makes it a lot easier. And then, you know, one of the other points, David, that you'll know from your experience with Dale Carnegie, it allows you an opportunity to be able to network with other individual owners who are in exactly the same business position as you. It allows you to have peer learning immediately, and it allows you to be able to, instead of being a lonely business owner where you feel like you're the only one struggling with that challenge, you realize that there's other people in your franchise who not only have faced that challenge, but because they might have already been in the system for longer than you, they faced it, and they've already tackled it and won that challenge.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it really does. I mean, that's probably the biggest win, right? I mean, because it's not only the processes are in place, but people will be willing to help you and move you along in the process.
No doubt about it.
So, you know, we're talking a little bit about here about two things. One, somebody who might be out there who's currently working, who thinks about a transition from employment into business ownership, right? And they're saying, so you know, how much time does it take to think about this in terms of actually looking into it, go through the process? We're going to talk about one particular type of a franchise model here, but I really want to give people a kind of a feel from somebody who starts thinking about it to researching to go through it. What's the timeline kind of look like?
So I'll give you an example, David. I'm working, you know, in my franchise consulting practice where I work with individuals who are looking to make this transition into franchise ownership. Most of the folks that I work with, David, that cycle typically takes them between 3 and 4 months from the time that we really start having a conversation about franchising, and I really start asking them detailed questions about what types of opportunities are interesting to them and what they want to do every day and what they don't want to do every day. From when we start that conversation until they're in a position where they have joined a franchise system and they're starting to get trained and ready to operate that business, that's normally 3 to 4 months. So as we sit here in the springtime, it's completely realistic for your listeners that by the time that summer vacation's over and their kids go back to school, they could be business owners.
And that truly is, actually, when you think about it, a short period of time.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think, David, I mean, we're going to spend in our careers 40 years in the workforce, building a career. And what I would like to say to people is, I'd rather you not only build a career, but I'd rather you build an asset while you're building a career. You can find opportunities in your career where you go out, you have a job that you love, and you're paid every day to do that job. But when you're done, they're not going to pay you anymore. There's no terminal value to that. But if you own a business, you're not only going to go out every day and enjoy building a career and earn a living, but at the end of the day, you've also built an asset that you can then sell at the end and have that money to retire on. So I think you get a double benefit from it over your career.
And there really is an advantage to having a known name brand. I mean, I think that's something that is also sometimes underrated.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, David, there's tons of examples of people who go out and build their own businesses from scratch. And that's a very successful model. But I think that jumping in and joining a franchise system where there's an established brand, where there's systems in place, where there's peer owners, what it allows you to do is not just speed through the process, but it reduces the risk of starting that business. Because that business has already been implemented and duplicated multiple times before. It's been refined, and when you're joining the system now, you're really jumping into a pretty known commodity that if you're joining a well-established system, the customers that you're going to be servicing might have already heard of the brand. They might already know the name before you even open your doors.
There's no question that that's the advantage, right? Especially on a marketing side. You know, you're already connecting with the audience. Yes, there are advantages and disadvantages. But there are preconceived notions about brands. So you do have to be smart and you do have to be careful about that. But the reality is that as long as you do your due diligence, as long as you think in advance and you really take some time to learn about the franchises, I do think that's one thing I do want to make sure that we talk a little bit about, the due diligence that an owner needs to think about. This is a big step, and they need to make sure that they do that due diligence.
Oh, absolutely. David, this is one of the biggest investments that someone will make in their life, financially as well as a career decision. And just as you don't move from one job to another carelessly without investigating the company and going through an interviewing process and making sure that not only that you're right for that job, but that that job and that company and the culture are right for you, you have to do exactly the same investigation and research when you're considering joining a franchise. And that's why this process takes 3 or 4 months and not 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, there's
no
question.
It really takes you time to meet the other owners and meet the executive team and research the industry. And as you go through those appropriate due diligence steps, you'll gain increasing confidence in the decision process and the brand that you're going to be joining.
You've mentioned it before, but I think just to give a perspective, you know, of the number of people you speak with in an average month, what are you talking about in terms of actual people that say, hey, you know, this is for me, and they do their due diligence and go through the process? What are we looking at in terms of ratios so that people get a perspective how important it is to do that research?
Yeah, here's what I thought, David. You know, of the folks that I work with, I would say, well, if we use last year as a baseline, one out of three of the people that I work with as we go through the investigation process will actually find the right business, and they'll move forward as a new business owner with one of the brands that I introduce to them. So, you know, as we go through, you know, a year, you know, I'll work with probably 100 or 120 different individuals in the year in a detailed investigation process. And about one in three of those folks will end up becoming a new business owner, which, to be honest with you, David, it's a big source of pride for me. You know, as you know, we've known each other for a long time. My professional passion is to help people make this transition into becoming business owners. It's been so personally rewarding for me and my family that I want to share that experience of business ownership with everybody. And this is one of the methods that I use to help people to make this transition into business ownership.
Just to make sure the audience may remember from last time, but if they haven't heard you, you own a franchise yourself. You do this yourself. So it's not like you're not embedded in and understand the process.
No, I didn't start as a franchise consultant until I had already owned a franchise for multiple years before that. I mean, this came from me really understanding as a franchise owner the power of the business model, and then wanting to come into it and share that power of that model and the advantages of franchising with other people. Absolutely.
One of the models that we're going to be talking about today, and certainly in the next segment, is the semi-absentee model. But before we go to break, give us an overview of what a semi-absentee model really is for business ownership.
What's interesting about a semi-absentee ownership is that it allows the owner to make a part-time transition. So in a semi-absentee business, in brief, what I will tell you is there is a manager, a hired manager, who is in charge of the day-to-day operations of the business. And the owner of the business, their responsibility is really to be an executive on a part-time basis. So I think, as we'll talk about after the break, there's a lot of opportunities for transition that allows you, because you're only going to be committing 10 to 15 hours a week to the business at the beginning. It allows you to really be able to navigate a smooth transition out of a job and into business ownership, so that once you're in it full-time, you can really scale and grow the business dramatically.
We're talking with Chris Sinkar from FranChoice. We're talking about franchising as a model for business that you can get into and really make a difference for your life. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Chris Sinkar from FranChoice, and I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're talking about franchising as an opportunity from transition from employment into business ownership over time. Chris, in the first segment, we ended a little bit talking about the term semi-absentee business. And so as we talk about this type of semi-absentee ownership, Could you give a little recap again, kind of overview of what it is, and then talk to us about why this is such an attractive opportunity for someone who maybe has, what, 10, 15, 20 hours of time that they need?
To recap, a semi-absentee business is one where the owner of the business doesn't have to be there on a full-time basis. Instead, all of the day-to-day operations of the business are managed by a hired manager who's in charge of all the Monday through Friday day-to-day operations of the business. The owner's role on a part-time basis, and part-time in most of these businesses normally means 10 to 15 hours a week, the owner's responsible for executive tasks, administrative tasks, leadership of the manager, strategic development. But this starts out, David, on a very part-time basis with a limited flexible schedule for the owner.
When you're talking about, you know, someone who says, well, that almost sounds too good to be true, Chris, come on now. You know, how do they get their heads wrapped around that potential concept?
All right, so let's take a very tangible example. Most of us are aware, either as being a customer or having seen it before, we're aware of a whole variety of different semi-absentee style businesses. So one that I think is a good example to use is think about a hair salon, okay? Now, I'm not thinking about a fancy hair salon that's an upscale women's salon, all right? What I want you to think about is I want you to think about a Great Clips or a Sport Clips or a Supercuts. This is a hair salon where the owner of that business is not a hairstylist. The owner of that business is typically a seasoned business manager who's now making an investment in a business that they are not going to operate every day. They hire a stylist who also doubles as the day-to-day manager of the business, and that stylist slash manager hires, trains, and supervises the other stylists in the salon. The owner's role in the business, David, is to step into that salon once or twice a week to meet with the manager and have some face time, to then spend time evenings and weekends reviewing the operational and financial performance of the business, making sure it's tracking in the right direction, spending time to manage the administrative tasks of the business, paying the bills, things like that. And then also, most frequently, David, they're spending time looking for a second or a third location because these businesses, because of the limited time commitment, they lend themselves very naturally to being a multiple unit owner.
So when you say multiple unit owner, people might say, well, I know that there's a Sports Clip down the road and there might be another one on the other side of town. Is that typically a territorial situation? Is that something in which somebody has X number that they could potentially earn up to, or could it be across the country? How does that work?
When you would make an investment decision to join a system, let's take Sport Clips as our example. In most cases, most of the owners in that system are going to agree at the beginning that they're going to want to open multiple locations, but they're going to want to open them relatively close to one another. I live in Pittsburgh, David, so let's take Pittsburgh as our example. In Pittsburgh, there are about 20 Sport Clips locations throughout Pittsburgh. If we work with the national averages, those 20 locations are owned by a total of four owners who own, on average, five Sport Clips locations each. So there might be one in the north, one in the south, one in the east, and one in the west, where they densely pack in their units, and it allows them to be able to manage a group of stores and therefore a bigger business with efficiency.
It also allows for those four owners to share information, share data points, share potentially even people if there were issues in regards to sickness or other things. It's kind of like having a large company backup to your little business.
There's no doubt about it, David. And I'll be honest with you, the owners within a given market tend to be extremely cooperative with one another. You know, they spend their time sharing marketing dollars because it doesn't make sense to have a radio or a newspaper or a billboard campaign just for one store. So they'll have a marketing co-op. They'll share market information about new real estate opportunities throughout the market. So those owners do tend to be very cooperative with one another because the benefit of one really is the benefit of everyone within the market.
So you've talked a little bit about, you know, the hair care area. What are other industries that are great semi-absentee spaces?
One of the most interesting spaces, David, to me, that has been just a fantastic investment opportunity for years and years and years within franchising is the fitness world. Almost every fitness business that you'll run into, something as large as a Planet Fitness or something as small as a boutique yoga studio, they are almost always semi-absentee operated franchises. Those are businesses where the owner is not a yoga instructor. The owner is not working the front desk of the studio. Instead, those are businesses where the franchise owners are typically hiring a manager for that location, and they're typically looking for their second, their third, their fourth location to build out a multiple location business. And David, those are businesses that because they are membership-based, they tend to be very stable and steady cash flow. And they're also businesses, David, where people feel pretty good about it because you're helping people to better their lives, and people come in and they leave pretty happy from a fitness business.
Are there any other potential businesses that you say, hey, these are really specific areas where this might work?
Yes. One of the interesting ones that has been evolving particularly rapidly over the past handful of years has been the beauty segment. So if we trace this back in time, the franchising portion of the beauty industry really started to take hold about 10 to 15 years ago. And the first beauty brand that really became a national presence was Massage Envy. And Massage Envy took a model where they were taking a luxury day spa from a hotel or a resort, and they were moving it into suburban strip centers. They were moving into urban walking malls, and they were making it convenient to the customer. And because they were making it convenient, they were driving more and more customers in the door. They could drop the price point down. And so as Massage Envy has grown up and proven that that industry is just gigantic and growing every single year, it has spawned off additional segments of the beauty industry that are now franchising rock stars. You know, one example of that would be European Wax Centers, which is another boutique beauty business. It is extraordinarily successful, makes tons of money, and continues to expand every year. The newest segment in this business, which is growing faster than any other industry segment that we see in the world of franchising, David, you're not a customer of this, but your wife might be, is the eyelash extension business. David, this is a really fascinating segment, very fast growing, very profitable. So yes, as we look at all of these businesses, a Massage Envy, a European Wax, a eyelash extension studio, these are all businesses where the owner is not in that business. They're not a massage therapist. They're not a skin esthetician. Instead, the owners of these businesses are typically people who come from a managerial background. They're used to building and leading a team. They're used to being able to manage financial statements. They come from a marketing background. So they don't have to be a hands-on operator. They're hiring a manager, and they're spending 10 or 15 hours a week to lead the business in the background.
So when somebody's thinking of this as a potential option, this semi-absentee business, and they're saying to themselves, well, you know, hey, I'm working. You know, I could really use something extra. Maybe I'm an executive for an organization, or I'm just, you know, working through things that are changing in my life. How do they look at saying, can I do really a job and this? How do they balance that life?
It's a good question, David. And here's the interesting part about franchising. When you start investigating a particular brand, one of the interesting due diligence processes that you'll go through is you have a chance to talk to the existing owners in that franchise. So if you're interested in buying into a Massage Envy, one of your due diligence steps, probably the most important one, is going to be talking to the other Massage Envy owners. And you're going to be able to talk to them about the time commitment, understanding what am I doing every day, what hours are you spending, what hours are you not spending, so that you can really start to navigate in advance and understand what's the time obligation, what are the tasks I'm going to be doing every day, and really get an understanding for what your day is going to look like. So you'll know in advance, David, of what your day is going to look like, how much time commitment you're going to have to make, and whether you think that's going to be an attractive match for your lifestyle or not.
As we get ready to end the show here, and again, we're talking with Chris Sincar from Franchoice. We're talking about, you know, what can you do in regards to employment transition into business ownership over time? And we're talking about one of the models, semi-absentee. What are one or two things that, as people are thinking about this and they're thinking about calling you or thinking about emailing you? And, of course, we'll have all this information on HRPowerHour.com right after the show. Tell people one or two things to really think about that where they should go to research this and how they should have that conversation with you and why it's so important.
So I think, David, as I start a new conversation with someone for the first time, one of the most important items that I ask them to bring to the table is an open mind. David, I can't count how many times I have started a conversation with a new candidate that I'm working with, and they've told me at the beginning, they've said, Chris, I don't want blank business. I don't want a food business. I don't want a beauty business. I don't want a hair salon. And what I ask them to do is I ask them to just hold that preconceived notion, hold that objection, and just put it in the back of their mind, and just let's see how the conversation develops. Because oftentimes, David, in our careers, we have a preconceived notion of something that's not necessarily accurate once we actually dig in and look at the facts. You know, there's the old adage, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. That's exactly the same thing that I'm trying to get my candidates to avoid. So I would say, more than anything else, David, when we start a conversation about franchising and business ownership, what I'm asking my candidates to do is come to the table open-minded, so that we can have a discussion about all of the opportunities that are out there based on the interview and the consultation that I do with them. What I'm bringing to the table is my expertise of being able to understand what a candidate wants and then be able to introduce them to businesses that I know match that, even if the candidate doesn't know on day one that it's really a match.
Well, we're talking with Chris Sincar from Franchoice. We've had a great discussion about semi-absentee businesses and what it might be like to move from a transition of employment into business ownership. Chris, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. How can somebody get a hold of you?
I would love to have anyone who's listened in to call me on the phone. My telephone number is 412-877-2000, 412-877-2000. My email address is ccynkar@franchoice.com.
Perfect. And all that information will be on HRPowerHour.com right after the show today. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. I look forward to talking with you soon.
Thank you, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Don't have state-level protection for LGBT employees in your state? Think again. This is Ben Ford with VeralDana's Labor and Employment Group. Many states extend anti-discrimination protection to LGBT workers through their state anti-discrimination laws, but a few states don't. Courts have previously held that the federal law, or Title VII, does not extend protection to LGBT employees, so LGBT employees in states with no state-level protection could be terminated just for being gay. This is changing. Last year, the Seventh Circuit, arguably the most conservative circuit in the country, held that Title VII extends protection to discrimination against sexual orientation and gender identity. The court reasoned that discrimination on the basis of LGBT status is just another form of discrimination on the basis of sex. The lesson here is that even in states with no anti-discrimination law protecting LGBT, discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity can still cost you. Got a question about a claim for LGBT discrimination? Contact Veral Dana.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com.